Thanks for listening to Star Lores. If you like the show, please consider subscribing and giving a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also help us make more great content by becoming a patron at www.patreon.com. We would also love to hear from you on social media. You can follow Star Lores on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Enjoy the show, and may the Force be with you.
You are listening to the Star Lores Podcast.
I find your lack of faith disturbing.
Are you stuck up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder?
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
A note to our listeners. We are not religious scholars, nor are we experts in philosophy. We have an interest in both, but profess no final knowledge or professional expertise in these areas. Much of what this episode discusses is an amalgamation from a variety of sources and interpreted through our own lenses. Although Star Wars is a fictional work, the ideas and philosophies of the Force, the Jedi, and the Sith are all analogous to real-life philosophical, religious, and metaphysical concepts.
The Jedi and the Force reflect parallels to Buddhist symbolism and values, particularly in what we see of them as introduced by George Lucas's first trilogy. Jedi teachings about mindfulness, our connection to the present moment, freedom from attachment, and overcoming temporal obstacles are shared in large part by Buddhism. The Jedi Order shares traits with the Shaolin Monastic Order. Both orders practice a disciplined and monastic lifestyle, complete with distinctive robes, martial prowess, celibacy, and recruiting young children to spend their lives in the service of these organizations. Both groups practice within temples built in distinctive architectural styles, are devoted to ritual meditation, and the pursuit of spiritual enlightenment. For the Shaolin, who are Buddhists, this enlightenment comes in the form of nirvana, a state which a person is free of attachment, craving, and suffering, thereby extricating themselves from the endless cycle of death and reincarnation. For the Jedi, spiritual enlightenment means strengthening one's connection to the Force, a primordial energy which pervades the contents of the universe, from the most complex biological sentient species to a grain of sand on a dead world. For the Jedi, ultimate freedom from attachment comes with becoming one with the Force, which usually happens at death. Some Jedi have been known to disappear physically from the universe, becoming one with the Force moments before their physical body expires. Such Jedi have then demonstrated the ability to step out of their oneness with the Force for brief periods to interact as Force ghosts at critical moments in galactic history. Tyrannical governments have persecuted and sometimes attempted genocide on both the Jedi and the Shaolin. As part of their campaigns of hate and domination, these governments have physically destroyed the temples of the Shaolin and the Jedi.
Much of Buddhist teaching flows from the Four Noble Truths. The first is, existence is suffering. The second, suffering arises from attachment and craving. The third, suffering can stop through the attainment of nirvana. And the fourth, there is a path to achieve nirvana. The Jedi practice of meditation and pursuit of understanding the Force is similar to the pursuit of enlightenment undertaken by Buddhist practitioners. Both the Jedi and Buddhists believe in living lives that promote altruism and benevolence. Couple these, and we see in the Jedi a faithful reproduction of three of the eight parts of the Eightfold Path of Buddhist practice: right mindfulness, right action, and right samadhi, or meditative absorption or union. It is tension between the value of non-attachment and human nature that produces the drama of much of episodes 1 through 3. The practice of the Jedi before Skywalker's reforms reflects that of Buddhism in the separation of children from their parents, celibacy, avoiding close personal relationships, all done in the service of preventing attachment. The arc of Anakin Skywalker slash Vader's demonstrates an object lesson from the Jedi perspective of the dangers of attachment. Anakin became attached to Padme Amidala, and her life being in jeopardy caused him to suffer. As Yoda warned, suffering led him to the dark side. Everything that followed for Vader, such as war crimes and horrible medical problems and injuries, could be considered a direct result of his attachment.
The Jedi, like Taoists, believe in the universality of the spirit, the interconnectedness of everything, and that nature is balanced and harmonious. This is embodied in Jedi orthodoxy by the energy field that pervades all existence, the Force. In Taoism, the homologue for the Force is the Tao, the one which is natural, spontaneous, eternal, nameless, and indescribable. It is the once the beginning of all things and the way in which all things pursue their course. The Jedi also draw inspiration from the samurai warriors of feudal Japan and include elements of Bushido, the warrior code that governs a samurai's life and sense of honor. Benevolence, compassion, Jin, one of eight virtues envisioned by Nitobe Inazo. Through intense training and hard work, the true warrior becomes quick and strong. They are not as most people. They develop a power that must be used for good. They have compassion. They help their fellow men at every opportunity. If an opportunity does not arise, they go of their way to find one. The style of Jedi combat also resembles the Japanese martial art of Kendo, particularly in the earlier films where duels were only fought between humans with a single blade, and the ability to create fantastical elements in the fighting was limited. Both the Jedi and samurai see perfection of their swordsmanship as spiritual endeavors, and bring their respective philosophies to the development of their martial prowess. Zen Buddhism teaches that existence is ephemeral, and prepares its disciple for death, which inspired the samurai to adopt that practice. The Jedi also do not fear death and accept their conjoinment with the universal force, and see the self as one part of a larger whole, similar to the teachings of Zen Buddhism. The symbolism and focus on the sword for the samurai is similar to the significance of the lightsaber for the Jedi. The Jedi seek harmony and practice spirituality outside of combat, developing their peaceful skills and talents, but using the same exacting discipline brought to bear on their combat practice. In practice, the Jedi adopt the apprenticeship model common to both European and Japanese warrior traditions, as well as the religious/military hybrid functions common to knightly orders of both traditions. The term Jedi likely originates from the Japanese word Jedaigeki, which refers to genre-era dramas in feudal Japan, not unlike the term Western or spaghetti Western in reference to Western history.
George Lucas himself confirms the inspiration of Japanese, Chinese, and Eastern cultural influences. Quote, "I was fascinated by a number of his movies because they were samurai movies taking place in feudal Japan. Their atmosphere was very exotic, and I found it curious that there were no explanations. You are just thrown into this world, and if you know feudal Japan, it obviously makes sense, but otherwise it appears to be very exotic and strange world with its unfamiliar customs and images. And I think that all of this had an influence on my science fiction movies, as I felt liberated from the idea that everything has to be explained or understood. You simply adjourn to this world." End quote. Both George Lucas and Irvin Kershner, director of Empire Strikes Back, expressed personal interest in Zen Buddhism, Taoism, and general Asian motifs, and incorporated these interests into the symbolism, names, and subject matter of Star Wars, George Lucas identifying himself as a Buddhist Methodist. The Jedi believed in the collective consciousness of the Force and put aside their individuality to better understand and be part of the universality of the Force. Their strict lifestyles are a means to attain freedom from want, though other sects, such as the Sith, view this as unnecessary and restrictive. This nexus is the great source of conflict between the ideologies. The Jedi focus outward in altruistic acts, or quote-unquote right deeds, whereas the Sith are inwardly focused and seek to protect the self over others. The Sith give themselves over wholly to attachment, desire, and craving, rather than trying to eliminate it, and in this find their power.
There are also parallels to the Greek philosophical tradition of Stoicism, wherein the Force represents nature and reason, and the Jedi seek only to live in harmony with it, as it exists as a rational construct, and therefore everything that occurs, whether perceived as good or ill by the individual, is ordained as the way things ought to be. This fatalistic interpretation of the Force is most evident in Disney's Rogue One's Chirrut Imwe, who accepts everything that happens as, quote, the will of the Force.
I fear nothing. All is as the Force wills it.
The Jedi's pursuit to rid themselves of attachment, particularly those considered beneficial or virtuous, like the interpersonal love and eros, also comes from a Platonic interpretation. The prophecy in Star Wars of a chosen one has ties to the dying and rising god archetype, personified by mythological characters like Adonis from Greece, Tammuz from Sumeria, Osiris from Egypt, and Attis from Phrygia. Anakin Skywalker's Immaculate Conception and Virgin Birth are analogous to the birth of Christ in Christian tradition.
Taoism, duality, balance. The yin-yang symbol summarizes a metaphysical balance that all life seeks to attain, and in Star Wars reflects the balance in the Force, and the duality of the light and the dark side. Although interpretations vary on what that balance actually means, the duality of the Force is natural and necessary. For light to exist, there must be dark, and for dark, light. This aspiration to achieve balance in the Force has two key concepts derived from Taoism: duality and balance. Duality implies a necessary existence of an idea, and its opposite as an innate function of its existence. The symbol of the yin-yang illustrates the wholeness of the Force, both the light and the dark. The Force exists as a singular consciousness via the extinction of self, or the nirvana state in Buddhism. These doctrines are evident within the Jedi discipline, which warns against self-interest and desire as gateways to the dark side. The concept of duality has taken on a new perspective in the Disney canon, if Snoke is to be believed.
Darkness rises and light to meet it.
Prophecies and predestination occur on multiple occasions throughout Star Wars. The Force can grant a person with the ability to see into the future or possible futures. And the idea of prophecy has interesting implications for the characters that operate within that universe. The Force may be both a dynamic and passive actor, with characters exhibiting luck or coincidental events that the Jedi attribute to the Force guiding their acts. Whether or not this is to say that the existence of the Force results in a deterministic universe, or if the characters maintain a level of agency, allowing themselves to be guided by the Force, like the Jedi, or rage against fate as the Sith.
The Sith are often the antagonists of the Star Wars universe. However, it may not be strictly that their philosophy is evil, but rather that it is antithetical to the teachings of the Jedi, which themselves are also the source of behavior that could be seen as wrong. For example, intervening at some points in galactic warfare, separating families, and so on. The Sith value conflict. However, this is only incidental to the true Sith values of individualism and liberty. The Sith value independence above all else, and it is from this independence and the fear of losing it in an otherwise hostile and anarchic galaxy that they create power hierarchies to protect themselves. And it is here that the Sith begin to act in a morally repugnant way to us, where they justify the domination of others and, ironically, do not extend the ideals of liberty to others freely. The Sith value the cultivation of individual progress and pursuit of bettering the self. Sith philosophy contains many homologous elements to real-world philosophical systems. Most obviously, the Sith believe in master-slave morality, originating from Friedrich Nietzsche. Master morality refers to the individual's pursuit of power and will to realize whatever goals they create for themselves, while slave morality is focused on altruism, empathy, and the desires of the group, even at the expense of the individual. Masters adhere to consequentialism. Any act is permissible, provided that the consequences of those acts benefit the acting individual, whereas slaves codify morality on a scale of good and evil. The Sith often take on the role of masters over slave populations and particularly resent Jedi teachings as a slave-based belief system. When Force aptitude becomes a means that gives a select few abilities far superior than the non-Force-sensitive majority, these individuals gain access, and in the Sith belief system, the right to pursue their own individual agendas and rule over anyone else that lacks the ability to fend for themselves. The Sith political views are similar to Machiavellian and Hobbesian understandings of nature, power, and the ordering of society. Furthering the master-slave morality to the political realizations that most living creatures live in a chaotic state of nature, one where power guarantees survival and weakness means death. The Sith view the world through this same materialistic lens. It does not concern itself with higher moral aspirations and immaterial idealism. This ties to a pseudo-hedonistic mindset of the Sith, where their actions are dictated by what is good for them, be it the enslavement of another species or the careless manipulation and inducement of suffering for others, so long as it guarantees the Sith more power or weakens any potential threats to their power. In the view of the philosopher Thomas Hobbes and the Sith, the preservation of successful societies requires a strong, authoritative, sovereign leadership. Hobbes believes authority comes from mutually agreed upon interests for the commonwealth of people, which has materialized amongst the Sith in the form of Sith alliances, particularly those of the ancient Sith who had often more than one ruler. This system was seen as inferior and ultimately weakening of the Sith ideology by Darth Bane, who instituted the rule of two to concentrate power in the individual. Machiavelli underlines the importance of effective, ruthless leadership and the methods to pursue and maintain power from enemies, would-be usurpers, the need for conquest and subversion of tools, and the ultimate goal of a ruler is to secure their throne. The Sith implement many strategies, from outward expressions of sheer force to the arts of subtle manipulation of one's enemies and the disregard for traditional morality. Power and the pursuit of power is the only way for an individual to guarantee their own liberty, lest another more powerful person comes along and takes it from you. And power is a zero-sum game, where the increase of another's power is always a loss to your own. It cannot be shared. This is pivotal to Darth Bane's reforms. While the Sith may appear to value hedonistic tendencies, with the ultimate good being the pursuit of individual benefit, vices are often seen as a weakness instead of a source of strength. Hedonism allows outside influences, appetites, or desires to manipulate the Sith instead of being held in check by the superior willpower of a Sith, effectively creating a slave of the would-be master. Machiavelli warns of the ability for vices to subvert the rule of an individual.
The Sith count themselves as free from any moral code beyond self-interest and the pursuit of power, and consider any actions outside of these objectives permissible and necessary. Circumstances will dictate whether or not an action is good or in their interest, and they are not above killing, manipulation, deceit, and enslaving others for personal gain. Everything is morally relative.
Despite the emphasis on the individual, collectivist Sith thinking has emerged in specific areas of the Star Wars universe. and with it racialized hierarchies based in racial supremacist ideologies. When the Sith species began to intermix with the galaxy at large, they believed themselves to be superior to other species and ranked their own worth on a blood quantum level when assigning pureblood and half-breed designations, which included a place in the social hierarchy. During Palpatine's empire, he created human-centric policies that discriminated against non-humans. At some points, Sith acted collectively, such as the Brotherhood of the Sith, who tried to unite to fight the Jedi. Darth Bane abolished this collectivist thinking as a betrayal of fundamental Sith philosophy. The Sith Code was written for the Knights of the Old Republic game by David Gator, noted influences of Mein Kampf when writing it. Other philosophical perspectives that the Sith draw upon are social Darwinism, where the Sith believe the fittest, and in their interpretation the strongest, have the right to rule and the weak are naturally subservient and expendable. Survival of the fittest and social evolution extends through the progressive increase of power. This includes subjugation of peoples and cultures and is used to justify the mistreatment of those unable to survive through strength or force of will. Elements of eugenics that extend from this philosophy and appear in the biological manipulation of subservient races such as the Masasi. On a philosophical and biological level, Richard Dawkins' selfish gene illustrates the biological imperative for self-interest as a fundamental characteristic of nature and can use even altruistic tendencies as a function of its own survival. The Sith share this naturalistic view of selfishness as inherent to progress and life. Ayn Rand's objectivism shares commonalities with the Sith in rational self-interest and the morality of the pursuit of individual happiness. Individuality and liberty are at the core of Sith philosophy. In a subversion of Western-style democracies, where the individual is made equal and protected through the law, and freedom extends from these protections, the Sith believe in ultimate liberty from constraints, including protection offered by governments. This true liberty can extend to libertarianism and/or anarchism based on the individual Sith's interpretation. Egoism and anarchism, while sharing self-interest as a moral imperative, do conflict. The pre-Bane Sith adhere to the systematized doctrines of their belief in contrast to the rule of two adhering Sith, which are closer to the anarchist philosopher Max Stirner's rejection of, quote, a great idea, a good cause, a doctrine, a system, a lofty calling, unquote.
Death is the greatest threat the Sith, or any biological entity, encounter to the preservation of the self. Any enemy except death can be beaten. Many Sith over the millennia have come to find, despite ever-increasing power, death remained a foe who could not be vanquished by any amount of manipulation, violence, or treachery. This has led to many Sith becoming obsessed with attaining immortality. To the ancient Sith lords, immortality could be achieved through the preservation of one's legacy, culture, and ideas. Giant tombs and sculptures were built to immortalize Sith aristocrats so that even though they may die in body, a facsimile of themselves would remain eternal. Not satisfied with a facsimile of everlasting life, the Sith would experiment with sorcery as a means of prolonging their lives. Resurrecting souls or binding them to artifacts, and eventually attempting to inhabit and possess bodies. This preoccupation with death is present in Sith lords creating clone bodies to inhabit or throwing themselves into the depths of the dark side to uncover a means to preserve their own life in the face of certain death. In some cases, like that of Anakin Skywalker, it was not the fear of death of the self, but rather fear of death for those he loved, which illuminated his path to the dark side. With the obsession with death comes the desire to manipulate and control life. Some Sith discovered methods of creating life, for what greater power could there be than the creation of one's own slave species and absolute authority and power over life and death? Such ideas can be paralleled with Luciferianism and Tolkien-esque ideas of the ultimate evil in rivaling and attempting to usurp or play God. And to the Sith, what greater aspiration could there be than to become God? This has led to numerous occasions of Sith creating and mutating subservient species such as the Masasi and experimenting with manipulation of midichlorians and control over the Force, which has been established as the wellspring of life. Anakin's denial of death is the catalyst that propels him to the dark side, as he fears to lose his mother and his wife, going to greater and greater lengths to avert his fear. As opposed to the Jedi acceptance of death as a natural and cyclical part of life, Anakin instead turns to the dark side in an attempt to control death because of his attachment to life.
Death is a natural part of life. Rejoice for those around you who transform into the Force. Mourn them, do not. Miss them, do not. Attachment leads to jealousy. The shadow of greed, that is.
What must I do, Master Yoda?
Train yourself to let go of everything you fear to lose.
So in Star Wars, the notion of there needing to be balance in the Force, we hear it come up a lot in terms of like the prophecy of the Chosen One, bringing ultimate balance to the Force. You have the light side and the dark side. Does the balance require there to be a dark side? Is it necessary, a necessary component, like, you know, in Taoism, where both are equally necessary for balance? Or does balance mean the extinguishment of the dark side and the light side becoming the ultimate authority? Any thoughts?
It is hard to say. I think you'd really have to get into like the extracurricular material outside of the movies, because the movies aren't really even, I guess Obi-Wan in the original trilogy talks a little bit about balance. But there's not really any objective standard of what balance is or what it looks like. It just, obviously, the Jedi and the light side users of the Force are very slim, and the dark side users are all over the galaxy during the Palpatine's reign. So obviously that's unbalanced, but there's no real...
Like what? Yeah, exactly.
There's no standard of what. Balance? Yeah, what does balance actually look like? Yeah,
is it equal one to one ratio?
Yeah, yeah.
Is it, you know, authority in the galaxy?
I don't know
or
if
presence,
it, have or? You read anything. I have sort of had a theory that, like, generally, because everybody is connected to the Force and everything is connected to the Force, so is it like generally assumed among Jedis that like everyone's got kind of dark side in them, so they're like they're. Force influence of like the light side is bringing balance to the wider universe of the Force, if that
yeah,
makes
that's,
sense.
That's interesting. I've never thought about that, of like what, yeah, because everyone has a connection even though they know
yeah,
they're
yeah.
not.
Yeah, even they if they can't wield the Force, yeah. they're still, they're like
contributing to
yeah,
the net darkness
exactly.
or the net light
yeah.
of the galaxy.
Yeah, yeah, if it were on like in a spreadsheet or something.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's something similar to this in that the Force is kind of like a biological organism that's seeking homeostasis. And so as there's like too many Jedi, now the dark side comes in and sort of depopulates it and brings that level back to this net, like you were saying, balance sheet. And then once the dark side gets too powerful, then the light side comes back up and takes it down. And
so is the net, like, is the goal of the Force itself to reach 50-50 parody of darkness and light.
I think it's something like that, and especially when you look at like the repeating sagas of like all the empires of like the Sith and the Rakata that,
but
that
it, rise and it, fall. Is it 50-50 parody, or is it more sort of like the tide goes in and the tide goes out a little bit? It goes through phases.
Yeah, it's a natural cycle.
That's sort of, it's more like a cyclical thing than a necessarily like a parody thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's like your body's always trying to regulate its body temperature, right? And so it's not always even. It doesn't need to always be even, but it's always...
Yeah, if you look on the chart,
it's always coming back to this midpoint.
And it's situational too, right? Like if you're standing outside in the winter, you know, or if you're in the middle of the beach in the Bahamas, right?
Yeah. There does seem to be like... a lot of, it does seem to be in the, I don't know about the new Star Wars movies, but it does seem to me to be like there's almost a very much a determinism that's happening, and that the Force is like guiding the sort of, I guess the Force is influencing the major powers in the galaxy to such an extent where it's almost there's nothing you can do to stop it.
Yeah, and I think that's echoed in the first trilogy as well, because really at the end of Return of the Jedi, when Vader kills Palpatine, he's essentially Anakin Skywalker again, and he's fulfilling the prophecy. He's bringing balance by overthrowing the Dark Lord, just like he was supposed to all along.
Yeah.
Yeah. This also brings up another question about the whole thing about the prophecy, because we know now... both in the Disney canon and with old lore that came out with books and things in the expanded universe, that balance wasn't effectively restored with the end of Return of the Jedi. It's all implicated there, and like that's where this ancient prophecy ends. But we know the Sith come back multiple times in the future. We know, you know, or at least the dark side comes back in the future in different capacities. And the Jedi, you know, there's still that same ongoing struggle back and forth. So, like, as a definitive conclusion to that cycle, like, where... Do you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, I know what you mean. And like, when you look at those extracurricular Star Wars activities, you go back tens of thousands of years, and you're essentially seeing the same story.
Right.
Is happening.
So could one of them be again, the conclusion to the prophecy that again, already happened?
I don't think there is a conclusion to the prophecy.
Is a prophecy really an eternal prophecy that is meant to be refulfilled and re-
As we were talking about earlier with Buddhism, right? It's like the wheel of reincarnation is kind of like what the Force is doing with the whole galaxy.
Yeah, and in the universe, it does seem like the Force is more of a... I think maybe the question is a lot of times there's things that would suggest that maybe the Force is like personified in some weird way, that like there's a will to the Force, that the Force is like consciousness in a sense.
Yeah.
But it does seem the way the Force actually acts is almost like it's a force of nature and not necessarily like
good or evil.
A consciousness. Yeah. It's like this force of nature that is inevitable and will sort of move the chess pieces where they may go, you know.
But going back to my organism analogy, and especially with the prequels, when you start looking at midichlorians and stuff, right? That does give us some more evidence that perhaps in the Star Wars galaxy, the Force is almost like an alien entity. Essentially, that has colonized existence, kind of.
So we have to get rid of it, fight back.
You know, there is in, of course, you know, and I think Jordan does too, we have a deep love for the Knights of the Old Republic game series, and that's certainly one of Kreia's big points, is that the Force is something that should be killed. And I think it's hard to argue with her when
she's not necessarily wrong.
Yeah,
like.
But I mean, look at our universe too. I mean, we don't have the Force, but it's full of plenty of bloodshed and awful things too, right?
So, what are we getting rid of?
Yeah, but the Force,
all consciousness.
The Force can be it's
you can't
like
feel pain if you can't feel anything.
That's right.
It's like discovering how to split the atom, right? Like that's what like wielding the Force is, and it can, even though humans are dangerous, they're much more dangerous with a weapon like that, right?
So we should get rid of it.
Maybe. Oh, I'm not sure.
Is that the consensus of this podcast? Are we starting our own Jedi purge?
It is an interesting thought experiment. Is the Force an actually like morally good
And
device in this universe?
There's also the opposite perspective, like the gray Jedi route, right? Where the Force is just neutral, a neutral entity, and it's how you use it that makes it good and evil, right?
Yeah,
and I think that has a lot of weight, especially when, as we're sort of doing here, as viewing the Star Wars
canon
as sort of like text, like you would study a philosophical text or something.
Yeah.
And the fact, again, that Darth Vader, and essentially, again, by the strict orthodox Jedi code, him killing Palpatine was a dark side act still, because he was doing it purely out of his feelings and his attachment for Luke. He was still doing a dark side thing,
right?
Even though he was saving the
aims of the good. Yes, and that's the other question too: do the ends justify the means in the view of the Jedi? That comes up in a Knights of the Old Republic comic book series, which we'll get into at another point.
Yeah,
where you have Jedi doing some very morally repugnant things, but they do it for a greater goal, right? So.
And as we mentioned, I mean, the idea of kidnapping children from, well, not kidnapping, I guess. But
the parents gave away the children.
But coming and taking children from families when they're like, what age? Like two or three?
Yeah, and they have no say, right? When, you didn't choose to be a Jedi.
Yeah.
It was, that,
and enforcing celibacy and all of that
all
stuff.
All these codes that you didn't ask for.
I mean, that whole system seems like, especially by our moral ethical standards, as flagrantly abusive. Like, you're teaching them to kill when they're like five or six, essentially. Like, it's crazy.
All a matter of perspective.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
I think you're preteens when you start your combat training as a Jedi, if I remember.
I can't remember the exact ages.
I remember
we did
there,
an episode on this.
There's a young adult novel series about Anakin. Or no...
Terrible.
Yeah, it was terrible. But it was about Anakin.
They had two. They have one about young.
No, it was about Obi-Wan. It was about Obi-Wan. And I remember they covered some of his like early life.
Okay.
And like the novel sort of started when he was first starting his combat training. And I think that's like at pre-teen age.
I mean, even the movies though, you see small children wielding lightsabers. And,
yeah, that's true. There is a scene where they're doing the visor.
But how is that? How is that any different than like learning karate? Like they're not actually killing
people. That's true.
People.
Yeah,
they're just learning a fighting technique.
Well, I mean, learning the fighting is just a small example. I was speaking more broadly. I was just using that as a polemic of sequestering them from their families and
turning them into child soldiers.
And turning them into child soldiers.
Right.
Which they do end up being in the Clone
they
Wars.
They are for sure trained to kill, though.
Yeah.
Right? And during the Clone Wars, they're actually deployed to battlefields as kids. Like, don't forget that.
Either. Was that like out of necessity because they just didn't have enough soldiers? Yes, or did
but
they
at
just
what
do
point
it?
Does necessity dictate the need to
I think the overlords and or the drug... whatever warlords in Africa would say that they need their child soldiers too.
We just don't have any other troops.
Yeah. Also, for the record, I read a series of graphic novels about it was sort of an origin story on the Sith and the Jedi, but it's 10,000 years before the Battle of Yavin. And
is that Todd, Dawn of the Jedi?
Yeah,
I literally just read that.
Oh, did you? Yeah. It was actually I actually enjoyed it. I thought it was pretty decent.
I loved how just on like an aesthetic level, how the Rakata were drawn. Like they really took the designs from the KOTOR games and made them really effing scary. Because I thought they looked kind of goofy in KOTOR, but they made them look very like fish-like. They really accentuated how alien they were from normal aliens, I guess.
well the thing that actually like sort of ties like almost the gray Jedi would be closer to what those like original Sith were in sort of like that's how they wrote it. And they actually have like these two moons, like one moon is like the light side and one moon is the dark side. And if you're like too much on the dark side, they send you to the opposite moon. they send you to the dark side moon, so you have to look at the light side moon until like you become like, it's sort of like this interesting ritual.
Yeah, and if you
and vice versa. Yeah, if you're too light side, they send you to the dark side.
And if the planet is destabilized, it actually physically affects the planet as well. If
yes, yeah, it's like super affected by like waves in the force, yeah. Like the actual planet. It's actually quite.
That was the name of the Tython planet.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I would actually recommend people read it.
There's
a novel too, I think, that goes through it. You can read, but graphic novels like
novels are like the superior form of Star Wars. To be honest,
they're pretty. Yeah, I actually agree. Just having the visual,
Gorgeous. Yeah. Like the things you can do in the Star Wars. Yeah. Universe, I agree. Just with pen and ink is amazing.
But that sort of that was really interesting because of the conception of what the Force is and like how they sort of perceived the Force. And they were like a pre-hyperspace civilization, so yeah. they couldn't even travel outside of their own solar system.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like interesting how they like viewed the Force, not as like this dark or light side thing.
Are we going to get into a big tangent about Tython? Cause I could go. No,
we'll save that for like another episode, but I'm just saying as an aside,
It's like definitely relevant
how the Force is
interpreted.
Yeah.
And to bring this back to some of our earlier discussions also though, of the Force being that thing that's seeking homeostasis constantly, the Rakata were the dark side Force users and came and messed stuff up Tython, right? And
They tipped the balance out.
And it's again, even I think there was another race that predated them. It's like
And the Rakata were like the first civilization to, well.
No, because there was the Rodarin who had the pyramids?
Well, they gave them like hyperspace travel, and then the Rakata like started conquering the galaxy, right?
The Rakata figured out let's save this for Infinity, that episode.
Anyway, super interesting, actually. Yeah. Pretty good stuff.
Well, anyways, beyond all this discussion, it was kind of
when we do Christian's galactic history episode.
Dive into that.
Man, our 97 part
50 episodes for that, at least
it's gonna be huge.
Anyways, beyond that question is kind of rhetorical because there is, believe it or not, an answer that George Lucas gave. And I'm pulling this from an article called...
And just remind everyone what the question was again.
Because I certainly forgot.
On the balance of the Force, is a balance really a 50-50 thing, and dark, or is it the prevalence of the light over the dark? Which, if you just watch the movies alone, would be the impression you get, right? You see the good guys win in the end of Star Wars. Strictly speaking in terms of the movies without all the EU stuff. But anyways, in this article from Tor.com, The True Nature of the Force is Way More Complicated Than You Think by Emily Asher Perrin. She quotes, quote, for the record, Lucasfilm has stated officially in the Power of the Jedi sourcebook that the correct philosophy where the Force is concerned is the one held up by the Jedi Order in the prequels. It's an awkward insistence at best since one, this has not been confirmed in any other licensed material. Two, there are a plethora of fascinating perspectives on the Force that have been explored in the Expanded Universe novels. And three, this sends a lot of poor messages where the Jedi are concerned, especially when you take into account their horrible handling of, well, everything in those three films. So that is, according to Lucasfilm, the definitive...
I would also add, too, that it's like, saying it's the right philosophy.
Yeah.
It's like a philosophy isn't a thing, right? It's not a true or false.
It depends if you adhere to that philosophy.
A philosophy is internally consistent, right? But it's not.
Sure, but if your philosophy,
you can't have a right philosophy.
If your philosophy says all other philosophies are wrong by virtue of existing, then it is, if you believe in that philosophy, true.
Philosophy is phenomenological, I think. Like, it's not...
Depends if you believe in objectivism or relativism, which is another discussion for another episode. But all that aside, yes, there are... And the other thing, too, is because Star Wars is put together by so many different authors who have their own take on the Force, individuals who read into the Star Wars canon, people who only watch the movies say, yeah, obviously the good guys win, the light side is right, right? You have people who look at it more in depth, authors and things who wrote things like Dawn of the Jedi, who see more of a, you know, force of nature balancing act going on. You have people who side with the great Jedi, with every one of these nuanced interpretations that we just talked about. But yeah, according to Lucasfilm anyways, there is a right path.
Yeah, and I assume that comes from Lucas himself, probably. And given what he's done with the Star Wars franchise, I think we can just can it as the ravings of a cocaine and sun-addled California Buddhist. And let's be real that there are a lot of great Star Wars material, as we're talking about, yeah, that is like equivalent or better than the original trilogy. So. Yeah. Screw him.
It's all voided now anyways.
With Star Wars is bigger than Lucas, right?
Well, now is Star Wars bigger than Disney is a new question. Is anything bigger than Disney?
Nothing's bigger than Star Wars now.
Anyways, does next question, which I am personally fascinated by, is does the dark side always have to be evil? Is it more human? Do good desires like love, hope, and ambition reflect elements of the dark side, quote unquote, as well?
Yeah, it's interesting. Another parallel with Buddhism that we didn't really get into with the Jedi and their philosophy is that it's essentially an anti-life philosophy. When you think about it, and you don't have to think very hard, they are celibate in the first place, right? So that's one thing, but also everything that they're doing, abandoning your attachment, and this, you can say the same thing of Buddhism, is in Buddhism everything that you are as a human being, essentially your craving,
you're releasing,
your need to feed, to love, that's all bad stuff. You shouldn't have that, right? You should abandon your attachment.
Yeah,
and that's the only way you can get free.
It's a denial of arguably human nature,
of biology, essentially. Yes. And the Jedi are doing the exact same thing, right?
Yeah. And in which case, like, we're obviously forced into the lens of the movies that, you know, the dark side is bad because the Sith are bad, because that's what the narrative portrays it as. But diving into the philosophical concepts of the Sith, it's not all bad, and it is more human, let's say. You know, it appeals to your natural biological instincts, your needs, the desire for survival, to perpetuate life as a biological imperative. You obviously get into the more complex elements of it in terms of like domination. You have, like, you know, in real life philosophies that have a mutual, I don't know how to libertarians phrase it, mutually agreed.
I don't know.
Like,
I think you're just talking about the non-aggression
principle again. Yeah. Yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what I meant. Whereas a Sith would obviously reject that, right? And it's strictly like a force of nature situation where the strongest survive and are morally obligated to survive, or the absence of morals altogether as we interpret it. They are amoral and function only as a means to perpetuate their own survival.
Yeah, it does seem it can descend, like Sith philosophy can kind of descend into just almost pure like materialism, in the sense that like it's all that matters is like your pure strength and ability to survive and dominate others.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's really personified, especially by like the Sith species and the empire they had on Korriban, right? As we talked about in the episode, with what are they ultimately obsessed with? Immortality, yeah, right? Because for them, anything outside of life and existence is nothing to them. They don't want any part of it, right? Yeah. They don't want to be one with the Force. They just want to exist as they are,
yeah,
forever and ever. And I think also, now that I'm thinking about it, especially with our biological context of the Force, to give some weight to Lucas's argument that maybe there is
a right way,
is that when you look physically at what happens to the Sith most of the time, it seems that, and this is elaborated further in the KOTOR games, like as your character gets more dark side abilities,
the physical body,
his yeah, physical body, and even the people around him start to deteriorate, yeah, as well.
Yeah.
And so maybe the dark side is like a drug. It's like taking speed, right?
Yeah.
And this is really getting into a tangent, but the reason most people get into speed and like methamphetamine as a drug is for functional purposes. They don't really get into it to get high necessarily. They get into it so they can drive their truck all night long, or so they can work their three jobs and take care of their kids or whatever. And it works great for a little while, but eventually the body just succumbs to it. And, you know, everybody has that typical image of a speed freak. Doesn't look that dissimilar to the typical image of a Sith Lord. So maybe the dark side is like a drug. And if you use the dark side, it's always, it's just analogy. Damaging you.
Yeah. Yeah, right? But it also becomes a craving eventually.
And it becomes a craving as well. You can't.
It does seem addictive.
Once you use it, you have to keep using it. And you have to use it more, just like a drug, to get those same effects.
Yeah, right? And you don't even realize what you're becoming while you do it.
Exactly. So. And maybe the light side. And again, looking at the KOTOR games, there's no physical changes from using the light side of the Force. If you're the most light side person in that game, you still look exactly the same.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're the most dark side, you look
there's
like
a physical
demon,
penalty.
Right?
Yes. Yeah, that's actually interesting. The flip side too is a nihilistic view of like there is no morality, and
that's the one I lean more towards, just because it's more fun. But
yes, and so you know you're just using the Force however you will, and often things like personal development and stuff we view as good things, right? Especially in you know our modern context of like. I go to the gym to work out. I eat healthy because I want to live longer. Those are technically aspects that the Sith would encourage to obviously an extreme degree. But it is self-perpetuating. It is self-interest. The reason you want to get a promotion at work, you know, you might be a little more Machiavellian in how you scheme and do things. You don't necessarily have to cut your coworkers' throats, but you're still looking to attain more power, to achieve more, to better yourself. And that's often a principle in like a lot of self-help and like positive self moral understandings, right? Which you know is fundamentally what the Sith want,
yeah.
Right?
And again, it's like it's all very sort of antithetical to like the Buddhist teachings of not
releasing the self,
of not wanting money or a really nice body or whatever, of just letting go of all of that stuff, right?
Yeah, so it is in conflict, and I mean, in real life, you have Eastern and Western kind of. Philosophies too that
I mean there's the whole like self-help version of Buddhism but
yeah which is even a corruption of
I'm not really well schooled enough in Buddhism to necessarily
refute it
but
it definitely exists as a corrupted version of Eastern teachings brought to a Western context.
I mean corrupted version, never mind.
Modified.
Don't get me started on ontology.
So on reincarnation, a popular philosophy found in Eastern religions, why is it absent from Star Wars since it plays so much off Eastern religion to begin with, yet the concept of reincarnation is, at least in the physical interpretation, fairly absent. And yeah, hopefully this episode releases before episode 9 and we won't get a solid answer. Can Rey be the reincarnation of Anakin or reincarnation of the Chosen One? And does the concept of reincarnation apply to others like non-Jedi or Sith?
Yeah, I don't really know of any specific examples in the Star Wars literature of reincarnation. It is interesting that it seems to tiptoe right up to like the spiritual edge of reincarnation.
And that's where it stops.
Because the idea of having this Force, right? The Force that pervades energy, and that's the thing we all go back to when we die. It is very similar to
Nirvana,
Samadhi, Nirvana, and these kinds of things. But for some reason, there's not the idea of a two-way transfer of that energy. Really, you can only—it seems like you can only go into the Force, but for some reason, you can't come.
Yeah,
come back out.
Where do babies come from?
Except as a Force ghost.
Yes.
So it does seem to present a problem to like fundamental laws of physics, but I mean, in terms of like energy,
it's a one-way energy transfer.
Yeah, exactly. It seems weird, but
it seems like the closest thing to reincarnation that's even seen. It would be like. Especially in Legends canon, is like Palpatine.
Yeah, so that I was going to say the only time we really see a true form of reincarnation in terms of a physical body is actually from the dark side when they inhabit new bodies. And it's seen as a dark side ritual to preserve yourself.
And I mean, there is Kylo Ren sort of doing his incel Joker cosplay of Darth Vader.
trying to re-embody.
Which is sort of like reincarnation, but it's really just fandom, I guess.
No, that's. I think he sees himself as like carrying on the legacy of Vader.
Yeah, versus actually being
Vader. Yeah. But like with Palpatine, right?
Like the guy who shot up that theater dressed as the Joker, right? Same idea.
I don't know if that was...
It's literally the same.
That's not necessarily true.
They're both dressed...
I don't think that actually happened, but...
They're both dressed as that character, and they killed a bunch of people.
Yes. I think that's an urban legend, but...
Well, he didn't... I don't think he was dressed as the Joker when he shot the theater up, but he had a YouTube channel.
Oh, maybe that
filled with him doing Joker impersonations, and his roommates... talked about it. They would walk in on him.
Nice.
Anyways,
onto our Batman podcast.
Onto our Batman podcast.
But yeah, just the concept of reincarnation really only applies to the dark side or the negative interpretation, because it's a preservation of self. There is a popular theory that Rey might be the reincarnation of Anakin. Or a re-embodied version of a chosen one that actually keeps reincarnating throughout Star Wars history. Obviously, that comes in with the new Disney canon, not with the old EU. I find that an interesting theory. I would hope it to actually be true, just to lend credence to why Rey is so powerful and Mary Sue-like. But that aside,
it's just complete magic. That's it. It's not even the Force anymore. It's just magic.
It's Disney magic.
Yeah, Disney magic. She's just powerful because she's powerful.
What if she's not that powerful, but Kylo Ren is just a huge pussy? You know what I mean?
But he is.
That's what I'm saying. What if he's just like...
He's like way too weak and she's way too strong. It's like a very...
It doesn't make for a compelling story.
It doesn't make sense in the plot.
It's not great writing. Although I think in the plot, it seems to me like there's always supposed to be sort of a romance thing between Kylo and Rey. Yeah. So
they didn't do it very well, though.
They didn't do it very... They didn't do it very well. But I do think that's sort of part of why they were on equal footing combatively, because that would just be kind of weird to introduce some kind of strange S&M one dominant lightsaber partner situation.
Palpatine theories on Rey would also have been the only acceptable version, her being either a descendant or something, and it's an equal encounter reaction, like the Force is trying to balance itself out. But that would imply things like the prophecy is either on a cyclical basis or has yet to be fulfilled and is now in the process of being fulfilled.
Maybe this is a topic for another episode, but what exactly is the prophecy?
That is a topic for another episode.
What is the prophecy? Because they like talk about it a lot. I feel like they never actually state what the prophecy word for is.
Word or where it came from.
It's nowhere in the Star Wars canon.
Through the chosen
or
one
who made
is.
It.
At least in entirety. I feel like there might have been like a fragment or something about one who walks in the sky
Even like we read earlier, George Lucas himself said he's like, he kind of, when he wrote Star Wars, he was like okay with ambiguity and not like explaining, just leaving things left unexplained. So that could be just one of those things where he's like, I'm just gonna make it and everyone can like,
we'll take it for granted that it exists.
Yeah.
It does actually have more solid existence in the canon that was developed obviously in the EU and stuff, which we will delve into in another episode. So stay tuned for that. Kind of going off the reincarnation conversation though a little bit more.
And for anybody who's wondering, the EU is the extended universe.
Expanded
universe. Yeah. And I assume Christian's referring to the legends.
Yeah. Well, canon. EU now only, I think, refers to expanded universe, which is all the legends stuff.
Right.
I believe is.
Let's just get on the same page.
Right. Because the new Disney canon is just called canon, and I think they're trying very hard to keep it all cohesive. Because with the old legend stuff, you had all these different authors, and sometimes things would conflict, and it was really hard for them to keep things in order, which a lot of people criticize. I actually think they did a pretty good job considering how many different authors and things they had going.
And I think especially though the early Star Wars books and comics were just like pure pulp sci-fi. Yeah. Like, not
a lot of the early Marvel stuff.
Not was, good at all.
Yeah, like your weekly like, adventure strips. Yeah.
If you see it in a secondhand bookstore or something, leave it because it's not good.
You can read it.
I want it for like collector.
I may still own it. Have a copy of the first Star Wars novel.
Oh, really?
Ever published?
Like the novelization of the movie?
No. The first extended.
Expanded universe.
Yeah, it was. I think it was on Del Rey, who published a lot of pulp sci-fi, and it was about Lando Calrissian, and I think how he got the Millennium Falcon. But I couldn't get through it because it was really bad.
Sure, we'll dive into that in an episode on its own.
We should totally we'll do book do that. Reviews. That's a bonus episode.
Yeah,
book review.
But anyways, after a tangent, reincarnation. You see it a lot. Avatar: The Last Airbender is also heavily inspired by Eastern mythology. In that sense, only the Avatar seems to reincarnate. I don't know a lot about the lore of that show, but in that sense, it could be that there is a chosen one who exists as an Avatar. So Anakin, Rey, and any other number of prominent Jedi that existed in the you know, thousands of years ago are just reincarnating. And
I'm conflicted about that because I think it would be cool to introduce the idea of reincarnation to the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
It would open up a lot of cool sci-fi story possibilities. But then it just sort of makes it sort of more typical.
Yeah.
Kind of fantasy. I mean, every goddamn fantasy book has a chosen one.
Yeah.
Plot line, and I'm sick to death of it.
Well, it goes into the Hero with a Thousand Faces mythology, yeah. Where all these stories are drawing from the same source material.
Joseph Campbell.
Yes, thank you. I was thinking
Arthur. The Hero's Journey.
Yes, I was thinking Arthur Conan Doyle. Anyways, that's our episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you enjoyed our discussion. I hope it was informative.
Mm-hmm. And I hope Lucasfilm didn't hear me accusing George Lucas of being a cocaine addict. Because I want to get sponsored by Lucasfilm and Disney. My soul is for sale, Disney.
Yeah, amen. Peace out, guys.
See ya.
May the Force be with you.
And your lack of faith disturbing.
Why, you stuck-up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder!
But I was going into Tosche Station to pick up some power converters.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to give the show a 5-star rating and review, and give us a follow on social media. This episode was produced and edited by me, Jordan Swaim, written and directed by Christian Lutz and Sam Swaim. All original music was scored and recorded by my music project, Farewell to Shadowland.
Thanks for flying with us. We are interested to hear from you. You can reach us at starlorespodcast@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts, comments, or corrections. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a 5-star rating, review, and subscribe. You can also help us out through our Patreon at The Star Lores Podcast. Find us on Instagram, The Star Lores Podcast, on Facebook at The Star Lores Podcast, on Twitter at The Star Lores Podcast, and on YouTube, Star Lores Podcast. We'll catch you next time.